Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
All right. This is a special segment reporting live from the UK. Patricia Bright, legend herself. So I got to tell the backstory before we start. So when we were in London for our legendary London run, which I'm sure you probably heard about, everybody's heard about, 2,500 people showed up.
The rumors are true.
That's forever going to be. That's forever going to be engraved.
Our first London run.
Yeah. So you know, we was out there and we were doing a few different things, and I think it was Dial, right?
Yep.
Dial.
Yep.
He was like, "Yo, I got somebody that I think you should connect with, in the space, who's, you know, real big on social media, big on YouTube, da 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 da," and we were trying to make the connection happen, but wasn't able to make the connection happen. So then I went to Paris for my birthday.
Yeah, you tell a real story.
That's a long story.
We have time.
Went to Paris, and it was me, Troy, Abdullah, and Danielle. So Danielle and Troy, they was doing their thing for dinner. So me and Abdullah, we was by ourselves, and another one of our friends, Suli, I think it was.
Sully's who connected him?
I think it's somebody, Sully, yeah.
Sully, yeah. Shout out to Sully. He was like, yo, I got somebody who's in Paris that would be great for you to connect with if you happen to be in Paris. I'm like, yeah, I'm actually in Paris for the night. So it was the most random thing ever because I didn't know who I was actually meeting.
Yeah.
So when we got there, it was Patricia and her friend. And I'm like, yo, we was just supposed to link up with you in London. Yep. 2 days earlier. So it was the most random, crazy thing ever. And that was actually, yeah, it was my birthday. That night was my birthday night. So long story short.
She still remembers the time we left.
Oh, that was a legendary night in Paris.
Shout out to Zeus.
That was a legendary night in Paris. More bottles. So we met and we spoke for like hours and I got a chance to get to know her and familiar with her platform and familiar with what she does. So she is a dynamite in the space. She has 1.2 million followers on Instagram, 2.8 million followers on YouTube. She is a brand ambassador. She's a financial literacy expert. She's a fashionista. A variety of different things. Entrepreneur, founder of The Break Social, which is a platform dedicated to business, finance, financial literacy. So fast forward to us coming back to London on Halloween to perform at the prestigious Royal Albert Hall. And we're putting together a lineup. And I'm like, you know, we got to have some people from the UK on this lineup. And who better to have than Patricia? So she will be joining us on Halloween at the Royal Albert Hall. And I felt that, you know, since we're coming to London, it would be dope to actually do some content leading up to that with some people that's in the space. So I asked her if she'd be interested in coming on Market Mondays, which is the big show. And she agreed to it. So this is where we are now. Welcome. Yay. Welcome to Market Monday. That was a long story.
Thank
but
you
I
for
felt
having
good.
Me.
I had to be told. It had to be
no,
told.
I love it. I love it.
Yes, it's yes. Great. So, all right. So let's get into this. I want to have a conversation about business, social media, investing, different things of that nature. And it's very rare that we get to talk to somebody from the UK. I think this is the first time on Market Monday.
Yeah.
Wow.
That we've ever spoken.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
EYL, we spoke to a few people in the past, but Market Mondays, I think this is the first time.
Series of episodes, but it's important that the first time be the right time.
Yeah.
And the right person is here.
Yeah. For sure.
That's what I want to hear.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the business of influencers and how you generate income online, because you have a lot of followers, you have a large following, but you know, we always hear the stories of people that have followers and they don't make any money. They don't know how to figure it out. They got millions of followers on TikTok, millions of followers on Instagram, and they're struggling financially, but you've been able to actually turn that into a business. So how have you been able to turn social media influencer into a business, and how have you been able to generate income online?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been creating online for like 10 years now. So I didn't start as an influencer. There wasn't really a roadmap or like a specific business model. But what I did know is that there was something in it when I started, because number one, I was able to build an audience and I was able to grow slow and steady. I won't say that I went to millions straight away, 10 years in the game. And then I realized that more and more brands were reaching out. But when I started, I wasn't really that strategic about it because I was also still working a job. So I actually worked in finance. I worked in banking and like my degrees in accounting. So because I had like quite a prestige job, I wasn't that focused on like the online thing as much, but I could see that something was there and more brands would like reach out to me to do work. And I think a lot of creators are creating stuff either for free or for clout, or not necessarily like aligning it to what kind of brands or companies they want to work with. And in the beginning, I wasn't that strategic. So I was like doing little things here and there, not really knowing what the budgets actually looked like or knowing really what the potential was, because there was no one was telling you anything when I started. So eventually, I think I was doing more and more. And I think when I got more publicity and people were more aware of me, and I could just see that there were other people in the industry who seemed to be doing quite well, I was like, what's going on here? So I found out from someone who actually shared to me about basically how much money they were making. And I was shocked because I was making like a tenth of what that person was making, but we were at the same level. And I think at that point in time, I made the decision to kind of like, I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to strategize. I'm going to be very clear about my brand and the brands that I'm aligned to, and then making sure that I, you know, am working and getting paid what my value was. So it's just been me creating content, but very strategically to really kind of make sure that I'm getting what I'm worth and just working with the right brands that actually have the income to pay. So some people might make content in, say, a category that is, let's say, dog food. Like, you, your dogs are getting a ton of content and they get loads of views. But if brands that are aligned to dogs don't have any budget, then you can have all the views in the world, but you're not going to actually be able to make any money. So I'm aligned to the beauty industry and the beauty industry specifically, because they have resources and they pay a lot for creators who are in beauty. Fashion does not pay as much. So I balance the amount of fashion content I make. Again, I'm also in the finance industry because it's something I'm really interested in. I love, and I'm, you know, I have an accounting degree and worked in finance for 7 years. So then now brands love someone like me who's able to talk on these subject matters with conviction and knowledge. And so then I'm also able to monetize with those brands who also have big budgets as well. So that's a little bit about how I've kind of worked through this to make money.
That's a lot of game. So in that strategizing, how did you come up with the actual brands that you were going to target to say, all right, these are the ones that have the budget, I'm aligning with them? Like, was there a database or was like some type of search that you did to find them? Or you was like, I'm just going to trial and error this thing?
Listen, there's no benchmark. I didn't know what an agency was, an advertising agency. I didn't know the difference between a PR agency. I didn't know who was big, who was not big. So again, it's this game of trial and error. And also it's about knowing the names as well. So now if, say, a company like Hill & Knowlton come over, I know that they manage P&G brands. P&G brands are a $1 billion company. So I know they're the ones I'm going to talk to. If it's some small agency with some random person and some new brand that doesn't have any budget, I won't necessarily talk to them as much, depending on what the product is. But it's taken me a while to just understand like who's a mover and shaker in the industry, in the marketing agencies, to really get those connections. But also, I've made assumptions that somebody or an email wasn't that important at one point in time, and actually securing massive deals because I had no idea who that person was and they were actually someone very valuable. So it's still important to kind of be open to everyone. Mm-hmm.
So if you had to start over, let's say in 2023, you had no followers, and I'm not wishing that. So we're going to pray to God you only 10X from here. But if you had to start over in 2023 and had to grow your following back to the millions, what are like the 4 or 5 steps you would take to get there in this new digital environment?
So I would focus on a target group that I want to like talk to. Am I talking to young mums? Am I talking to older mums? Am I talking to Black women? Am I talking to, you know, men who are really into boxing or boxing shoes? So I would really niche down like the category of people that I'm wanting to talk to, and I'd make them my go-to group. And then I would think about how to make content that's super entertaining by bringing stuff that is current. I can't even give an explanation of how I would do it, but like if something was happening now, so something viral happening or something's happening in the news, I would like make sure I make content around that, but align it to my group as well. So the people, so these young mums are interested in what's happening with the government, not that they are, but how does that relate to them? So I would kind of mesh my niche with what's trending as well. And I was saying this earlier, for me, I think the game really is about volume. So literally being present on every single platform all the time. Like there's no time to breathe. Like, if you want to start from zero, there's no time to breathe for 2 years straight. Like, don't do anything else but make content.
What you said is actually, that's what we did. As far as the whole original mission statement for Earn Your Leisure was to blend pop culture with business. So we take a traditional subject matter like business, but then we still do, but especially back then we were using the most trending popular things in our culture. So we would talk about like, even before Earn Your Leisure, like breaking down 50 Cent's vitamin water deal, like breaking it down and making it, you know, talking about Beyonce, like, you know, when she talked about, like, you know, pay me in equity, stuff like that. So like we would take like different stuff, George Foreman's grill, the deal structure with that. So things that were popular and people were already familiar with in pop culture, but then shifting it and drilling it down to our niche, which was, you know, business and dissecting the deal. So that's something that we actually has done and we still do to this day, even with Mondays, like even every Monday, there's some new pop culture topic that happens. Yeah. Like Kanye, Kanye gonna pretty much do something every single week.
He's Elon.
And Kanye. Yeah, Elon and Kanye, they're gonna do something every single week. So that's a very valuable gem that you just provided. Let me ask you this.
They call it audience hacking as well. So it's like specifically hacking into the audience of people looking for, say, the Beyonce content, and then they find you.
Interesting.
That's a way.
Especially on YouTube. Because like if you put it in a title, search engines or hashtags on Instagram, you know, when people are searching something, like right now, people are searching Kanye West, White Lives Matter. That's trending. It's a trending topic, right? So it's like, all right, if you find a way to kind of flip that, and let's say that we did some content around that, but it's based around the business of Fashion Week and how he actually disrupted the whole fashion industry by doing that, and how much money he made and how much money other shows lost. But the general arcing is the White Lives Matter, but we're not spending too much time on that. But it's not like it's not like complete clickbait, because it is about that. But it's about something else. So that's definitely a valuable strategy for anybody that's creating content, for sure. Let me ask you this. You said something that was interesting. You said that the beauty brands, they pay a lot more than fashion brands. So you focus more your energy on that. So what are some of the best practices with working with brands? Like you said before, when you first started, you didn't know. So what do you know now that you didn't know? Like, what do you ask for? Do you ask for the budget? Do you ask, what are my requirements? Do you ask, okay, I'm going to do a social media post and I'm going to do one post on my IG story? Like, what are some things that now you're seasoned that you know how to talk to corporate brands and kind of know what to expect going into it?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so stage one is one, attracting them. So how do you make yourself appealing to the brand? So there's an element of using their product, talking about their product, having really high visuals or really high engagement already. That way they're going to find what you do, and you may even tag them with tag them in your content before they ever reach out to you to do content. So number one, you've attracted them. They now would email you. In the first instance, there's often a case of, would love to send you product, would love to meet up for coffee. A lot of them want to meet up in person just to get an idea of who you are. So I think that's still a very important thing to do. And the next phase is either working directly with them yourself or working through management. People do have their own, you know, thoughts around that. But for me, I'm at the place where I still work with brands very directly. And usually they will give me a brief. I wouldn't do anything without a brief, because I want to know, what do you want? Do you want engagement? Do you want sales? Do you want awareness? Give me an idea of what you want and what's the product. And then off the back of that, we will then negotiate. But usually they will have what they want. They'll say, we want one stories, two TikToks, or one YouTube video, and here's our budget. So I can either agree to the budget, like the budget, or I can say, you know, guys, this is actually my rate card. Can you meet up with my rate guard? And then we will kind of, you know, negotiate and work out what I can do with the deliverables. And I have to think about how much time I'm going to invest into the work, as well as the value of my audience as well.
So you said something about putting content out all the time for 2 years. We can't blink. So I wanted to talk about the multi platform strategy, right? Because obviously you have 1.2 million Instagram followers, 2.8 million YouTubers. So is the content being specifically made for each platform, or is it just like, all right, I made the content for YouTube, I made this content for Instagram, maybe I made this content for TikTok? And if that is the strategy, which is the best platform that we should be living on?
I don't know if there's a best platform, and content is very hard. Like, I'm sure you guys know, to be able to produce like at volume, at scale, is very difficult. So I love the idea of repurposing. So say you have, you know, you've got this one piece of content, or someone films one piece once a week, one YouTube video, and then they then chop it up to work on all the other platforms as well. There are ways that you can upload one piece of content into certain websites and they can produce a transcript for you. They can provide the text version and they can provide a caption version as well. Mm. So I would make one piece and then cut that one piece into like five different pieces, including text. And then I would put that on all the different platforms. And then if I have time, I'll then make original pieces of content to go onto other platforms as well. But I think YouTube is like the number one spot, like first, like there is where you can actually build depth of audience and people who genuinely care about the brand long term.
Perfect. What are two platforms that you think that people are not posting on enough? And if they did, it will allow the brand to have like a lot higher following and traction.
It really does vary, because there was a time where brands were all working on Snapchat. So they're like, in briefs, I was getting Snapchat briefs, yeah. And they were like, we'll pay you this. They're not doing Snapchat briefs anymore. They said, Snapchat isn't a goal or a target for us anymore. I remember getting that email. So I could have chosen to stop uploading on Snapchat, but there is still audiences and people on Snapchat. So it's all about the balance. Like, do you want audience or do you want brand attention? So I think most social media managers for any company is kind of being aware of all the platforms, but then internally they will have their own directive of what's important to them. So fundamentally, again, be on all platforms, get as many eyes on your content as you can. But I know that's hard, so maybe focus on just two.
Let me ask you this. Credit. Let's talk about some finance stuff. The credit system is different on the UK than it is in America. So what are some of the biggest mistakes? Let's talk about the UK side. What are some of the biggest mistakes in the UK that people make that you see when it comes to credit?
I mean, is it that different? I don't know if it's really that different from the US.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding, like credit cards, like you have the same access to credit cards that we do in America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
More or less, but I think there's a little bit more protection. So
over there, it's more protection in the UK, right?
Yeah. There's more protection in the UK in that younger people often there's more regulation about who can have credits advertised to them. Mm. So there is some kind of security for people who are younger and impressionable, who won't necessarily be able to get access to credit earlier. And I think as well, they do a lot more checks before they give people credit. But again, sometimes the credit system can be quite predatory as well, and they will kind of attract people who are less informed about how to use credit. I think that problem is like a global problem, though America might be the worst for it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Sorry, guys.
But I remember, because years ago, I remember when the UK was the first one to really ban buying crypto on credit, because you used to be able to buy Coinbase, to be able to buy cryptocurrency on credit card. And I remember the UK was like the first country to stop that. And America was still allowing it for a long time, but the UK has stopped it earlier. So I feel like there's more safeguards and more, you know, regulation.
Consumer protections. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot more regulation. It's around advertising, around credit, around, I think fundamentally the country wants to protect people from making financially risky decisions. Now, risk isn't always a bad thing, but again, it's a bad thing to people who are uninformed. So I think, yeah, there's more regulation around that when it comes to credit and crypto. I did not know you could get crypto on credit. I can see why that would be banned.
Please don't do it. Yeah.
So what are some of your tips for credit just in general?
I mean, in general, it's one, having credit. So this is the mistake that I've made in the past. And I've seen some people who are from more conservative backgrounds. So actually, like, lots of us are from, you know, immigrant families. And so our immigrant families often told us, don't get credit. Credit is very bad. Don't borrow money. It's not your money. So actually, a lot of us lacked having any credit. That was a big problem. So even for myself, I think I had money. I had a job. I was consistent. And I remember when I wanted to get my first mortgage, I didn't have any credit. I had no credit history whatsoever. So I think people actually building a credit history when they're younger is really important, and to like know how to build good credit is something that a lot of people need to focus on here, and that not all credit is necessarily bad, but you just need to be careful with it.
Yeah, so obviously you've built the following, you're able to monetize and align with brands, but one of the things you said in our conversation is that you were able to save. And so I wonder where that financial discipline came from. What are some of the strategies that you use to save and budget? Because a lot of people want to invest, but they don't have the money to do it, right? And sometimes you have to figure out, what am I going to do with my money? Am I going to save? Am I going to invest? Am I going to spend it? And so how did you come up with your strategy?
What was my strategy? I mean, I've been very broke. Like, I know what it is to not have a lot. So I think I'm naturally an extremely cautious person. And just because the money is rolling in, like now, like you just never know what could happen next, which is a mindset I also still try to like fight against. But I also think that's a good thing. I'm glad that I had that level of, let me be careful with my money. And I also had some tax issues as well, like when I first started my career and ended up owing the government money. And I remember like realizing that I didn't have enough savings to pay the government this tax thing that I had to pay them. And so after that, I was always like, I'm always going to make sure I have money aside to pay anything that comes up. So I think I was just raised to kind of save. I've struggled enough to know that you need to have some protection. And then stuff happened that made me learn I need to have money on the side. Yeah.
You have the nest egg. How much of your gross revenue or gross income are you putting aside? Because I think entrepreneurs need to hear that part. And also, can you tell us about how you are actively like living below your means and why that's important to you?
I mean, it's all relative. I think I put most of my money aside. Like, I don't really spend that much money. I think that, right, I use my corporation to spend, right? So everything is a business expense besides my home and my mortgage and my kids' schooling. So I try and align all of my spending to only things that my business needs, and like just some personal fun things here and there, but it's really not a huge ratio based on how much I earn, because my main desire for most of my income is basically to invest it. Like, I just want to keep buying houses. So that's the thing that I enjoy. And I bought premium bags in the past, you know, Hermes and all that jazz. And I'm like, this is fun, but I'd rather have like something that's got bricks and mortars. Like, yeah.
Life is good when you can say Hermes and jazz. Like,
yeah.
He's appreciating that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got all of that. I've had the bags. Like, I don't know. I think you get to a place where you're like, this is great. This is cute. But it's like still stuff. Like, it's still material stuff. So for me, like, it doesn't entice me as much as seeing other things grow. But I think that's just where my head is at. But again, I've always loved, it's always important to like enjoy yourself, buy certain things that give you that feeling. But for me personally, it's not a prioritization because there's still things and goals that I have that I want to do.
So let's talk about the real estate. I know you just bought a property on auction. Can you talk about that process and like kind of like walk us through it for anybody in the UK that might be interested in kind of, you know, taking that route?
Yeah. So auctions are like fabulous. I love a good auction. I bought a house previously on auction and that has really gone up probably double in value. And then the process is fundamentally going on to Rightmove, which is similar to, you guys have Zillow. Same thing. And you will see that auction houses are on site, but you can't really search specifically auction houses. But what I found is that most agents have kind of an auction arm. So once you like quite start to learn who these different auctioneers are, you'll know that one day a month they have an auction and they put their lots up probably a week to 2 weeks before that lot's going to happen. So you can actually sign up to all of the different auction websites, look at all of the different lots, and then look at what homes you may want to be able to buy. The one thing I've noticed is that their list prices are very fake. So they might list the house for £100,000. Like, you're like, what? You can buy a two bedroom house for £100,000. That house is going to go for £250 minimum. So I think that people should just be aware that the bargains that they think they're going to get at auction aren't necessarily always a bargain. So again, doing the maths and the calculations beforehand is very important.
Yeah, when you said about every time you get cash, you're looking to buy new real estate. I wonder, what type of homes are you looking for? Is it like a single family lot or is it two family? Like, what is your method when you're trying to find a new home?
So I look at my existing portfolio and I think about what I do have and what I don't have. So I have a four bedroom family house already in one specific part of London, right? So I don't want another house next door that's exactly the same, because actually it's too similar, like it's the same thing. So then I'll buy another two bedroom house, which maybe is better for students, that is in near a university location. Or I might purchase a home that's more premium in the city that I want to target city workers in. Or I want to buy somewhere that's more lower income so I can provide more affordable housing for maybe people who are on government housing. So in my portfolio, I have a mixture of like different homes that that provide different values in different locations as well.
That's fascinating. Earlier when you were talking about the advertising agency side, are you actively reaching out to the ad agencies to try and get the deals done? Or are you just researching them to understand like the supply chain and how the money is being dispersed to influencers?
I'll be really honest with you. Personally, I have not had to reach out for any work that I've ever done. So I am I've been very lucky that like everything I have is inbound request. I haven't had the capacity to go out and necessarily pitch myself. But I think what's been valuable is that I've had a lot of PR. So in terms of, and not paid for PR, my PR has been all organic, in that the features I've had are because people have seen my work and my work has spoken for like my value. However, I think that pitching is a really important thing to do if someone is really like, you know, they're new and nobody knows who they are. I think going out there, introducing yourself, letting people know what you can do is a super important thing to do. There are some websites that allow you to find certain people's contacts in the PR industry. I cannot for the life of me remember what that is. But again, people can look for some of these places to find email addresses for PR. And LinkedIn's a great place as well.
LinkedIn, very important platform. So where's your family from originally? Is it Nigeria?
Nigeria, yeah.
Okay, so the UK is interesting. If I could just talk about the dynamics of that for a little bit with you. So in America, I think Black people make up like 16% of the population. But in the UK, it's like 2% of the population. But another
2%.
But another thing about it that's interesting is that in America, like, we have a lot of immigrants, like Troy's family, they're from Jamaica. But like, I think Ian and myself as well, like, we African-American, different names, however you want to call it. But like, we've been here. So it's not necessarily immigrants. Like, we're like part of the foundation of America. Whereas in the UK, they don't have that, right? Like, every Black person that's there is an immigrant at most. So it's like the financial literacy is even harder because they're not only at a disadvantage because they're even a smaller part of the population, but they're everybody's first generation or second generation. Like, every single person is coming from a country like Ghana or Nigeria or Jamaica. So you have a lot of challenges. So talk about the landscape for Black people in the UK, because a lot of people don't even know that there is a Black population in London or the UK. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy because a lot of people are just not educated enough because they don't travel. So talk about the landscape, the challenges that you face, and why financial literacy is so important for the Black community in the UK.
Yeah, this is a really big thing, in that, yes, we are a very small population, and immigrants who come over are usually like, the parents are cleaners, the parents are low income jobs, the majority of them. So some of them come over as students and maybe they're super educated back home, but they come here and they can literally only be a security guard. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they don't necessarily have those jobs in really high positions. So I think the key thing I've noticed with all the Africans that have come over that I know personally, first generation, the thing that their parents pressurize them on is education, 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 go to school, read your books. And that's the only way to kind of get out of the concept of poverty. So the pressure is very much on the younger generation, or, you know, my generation, to be like, to be successful, because the parents are relying on the children to kind of do that. However, the parents have no assets, they own no homes, they own no land, and they don't always understand the system. So that's one of the biggest challenges, is if you know how to operate in the system, you can do well. You know how to get a mortgage, you know, you have a connect here, you have a connect there, someone sorts you out and gets your kids a job, which is what happens with the, you know, the English people who are from here all the time. But immigrants are literally starting from zero. But I, in a good way, I think it means that when we are successful, we're extremely successful, and we've just had to like force that literacy and force that understanding and focus on our education to really be successful. But it isn't easy. I'm not going to lie, it isn't easy for the immigrants here. And for the second generation, so people whose parents were born here, you also usually notice things being a little bit better for them. So again, I'm thinking third and fourth generations here are going to be in a lot better situations, I would hope.
Yeah, shout out to Brixton. Shout out to all my Jamaicans out there.
they're out here.
Yeah, so here. We ran into each other in LA, and it was like randomly, we're in the elevator. I'm like, wait, what are you doing here? And you're like, I just came from Fiji. And so it got me to wonder, I'm like,
can live you live a life?
Yeah, I mean,
live a life.
Fiji, right?
Hermes, Fiji, property.
I'm like, oh, you just
traveled so much. Yeah.
This is just a stopover on my way back to London. But I was wondering, like, because a lot of people don't understand even that type of connection with brands. It's like, oh, wait, you can actually use your following to actually benefit you for traveling. And so, can you talk about that and how that can help you in your journeys?
Yeah, I mean, so there's different ways it works. So number one, I've worked with tourism boards. So there are countries that want people to come and visit the country. So they'll pay you to come out there and take content of the country. So I recently went to Abu Dhabi. I've worked with, you know, some Caribbean islands. I've worked with even Switzerland, and we've gone out there. So they literally want the world to know about their country as a place to come to, which is what used to happen to Dubai a lot. Dubai used to pay a lot of people to come to Dubai. I was paid grand
a nice amount
to come, a lot to come to, not by any man or anything like that. No, the tourism board itself of the country was like, please come and experience Dubai because we want the world to know. And now the majority of the income from Dubai actually comes from tourism and obviously, you know, oil and all that jazz. And then there's the other side of brands often want to create experiences around their products or their launches. So say, for instance, I went to Fiji. That was a brand who had something in association with World Ocean Day, and some of their ingredients come from Fiji. So they say, everyone, let's go to Fiji and have an immersive session about the product. So usually they often bring people who are fans of the brand, fans of the product, or at least going to inform people about the product. So I'm kind of there like a journalist. And also journalists for many years have been living the good life. Like journalists from traditional media, they've been doing this. They've stayed at the finest hotels. They've traveled the world on the dime of other companies. But now actually online creators are the new journalists, because we are fundamentally bring the message of the brand and the product out to our communities. So that's how I travel the world.
Yeah. You become a virtual postcard, right? Because it's like, rather than getting a brochure for a country, you can go to social media and see 10,000 pictures of the same place. And now it becomes super attractive. So great strategy.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know you haven't had to reach out for it, but for a person who wants to have brands pay for their travel and to visit, what are the best practices to be able to reach out and begin to have those deals come in for them?
So I think number one is to kind of find out who the travel, say for travel specifically, you'd want to reach out to travel PR agencies. So there's agencies that are focused on tech or travel or beauty or fashion. So finding out who those travel PR agencies are, meeting up, connecting with them, doing a media pack, showing what you've done in the past and showing what you could create for a brand, and then having them keep you in mind is super important. You can also reach out to hotels as well. So a lot of hotels actually are building, say Four Seasons may build a new hotel in the Seychelles that people aren't aware of. So if you were to find out about the news about that, you could reach out to the Four Seasons, say, I'd love to do some publicity for you guys. Here's what I can create. Obviously, you'd email their marketing or their PR team, show them what you can do, and they may host you for four nights to kind of create content for them and market the brand. And actually, a lot of these companies, they already spend money on like a photographer and a marketing team. They may have budget that they put, you know, 20 grand aside to do that. But actually you're like, no, I'll do it for you, but just let me enjoy the experience. They probably won't have a problem with that.
Yeah, when I went to SLS Bahamas, I feel like half the everyone that stayed there was like taking contact. I'm like, what is going on? They're like, oh, yeah, you paid to be here? I felt like the only idiot. I'm like, tell me who
that's happened. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm like, my God. Yeah. So yeah,
I try not to tell everyone where when I'm at the hotel. I don't tell them I'm there for free because no, not everyone wants to know that.
And it's one of these things, going back to the tourism thing, and that's interesting that you said it about Dubai, because I actually pitched this to a few African countries. I won't say the names of the countries, but they didn't get it. And I'm like, my thing is like, you should pay for Earn Your Leisure, Market Monday. You should pay for us to come to your country because it's good PR. It's tourism. And we do that anyway. Like when we go to Nigeria, we went to Nigeria, we went to Egypt, we're going to put content up anyway because we're there. Yeah. So now it's appealing and it gives people a whole different view of the country and it makes people want to go. That's why Dubai became so popular, because everybody was posting pictures. The one country that does understand that, that's getting it, is Ghana.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
why you see Ghana's economy thriving the way it is because, you know, yeah. they've targeted specifically Black Americans. So it's become a travel destination for Black Americans. They did the year of the return. They're doing all of that. And it's a strategic PR targeting campaign for tourism, Black tourism specifically. And it makes sense. And I don't understand why other countries haven't really adopted that. But I feel like for the countries, anybody that's listening, that makes tremendous sense to, because this is a way that is going to give your country good PR. This is a way that's going to highlight your country. And this is a way that's going to drive millions and billions of dollars in tourism and business and investment to your country, because social media is the window of the world.
Bahamas, Caribbean Islands, Mexico, Australia, please call.
Jamaica.
There's a lot of Caribbean islands who are getting into it now. There's a few that have reached out. So fingers crossed, like I'm seeing a lot more happen in the Caribbean. So, and they've got beautiful islands that.
Can we do a collab potentially?
Yeah, we'll try and hook something up.
Yeah, you got to let us know. Because honestly, I feel like at this point, you shouldn't really be paying for anything. And that's why I think I told Abdullah that, like going forward, try not to pay for anything. Like if we go to eat, if we go out to eat, we should sponsor. Somebody should sponsor the dinner. If we're going to be in a club anyway, as you know, that legendary night.
Yeah.
You might as well just put us on a flyer and we'll just promote the party and, you know,
and pack it out.
Yeah. Exactly.
We're gonna pack it out. We got a good
time. It's a balance though. It's a balance. Cause once everything's free, like it loses the pizzazz. Cause I go on trips that nobody knows about and I pay for entirely because the pressure of always creating on the trip is also long. Like I actually want to enjoy myself and like I don't want to always be on. So it's always about, like I go for those trips that I see them as, this is a work trip. When I go to Switzerland and I'm working with the hotel brand, that was a work trip. But then there's other things that are like, this is my trip, where I don't necessarily need to commercialize that part of my life.
See, my whole life is commercial. So Everything I do is for Instagram anyway. Works. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, no, everything, man. Nah,
some things they can't see. Patricia, can you talk about that process of documenting it all? Because, I mean, obviously you said sometimes there's a videographer, but a lot of times there isn't. So you can talk about that, like who's shooting the content? Because like I said, when I would look at your page, it's like, I want to go to these places. It just looks incredible. You make it look incredible. So talk about the process of documenting.
Yeah, I mean, so I try to, number one, I have a tripod, so I can always make content wherever I am. Like, I will just put my tripod down and, you know, stand in the street if I need to. I have no, like, I'm never embarrassed because this is what I do and I make good money doing it. And then I'll have, like, either a photographer with me or my assistant with me who is able to capture content on the phone all the time. And yes, I've got, like, professional cameras. I've got the 5D. I've got the $1,000 lenses. I've got all of that, but often I don't need to use that as much because actually people don't necessarily connect with it in the same way. I might do that actually more to appeal to the brands or the companies to show them I can do the professional stuff, but people don't really connect with that. And then certain shoots and stuff, maybe I hire a production company, maybe the brand or company that I work with or the tourism company or whatever, maybe they bring their own photographer and stuff. But I think the concept of just as long as you've got your phone, you have the opportunity to create. Like, you don't need to wait for this team or this person or this specific photographer. Like, not really. I just can create with my phone with me anytime.
Yeah, I hope everybody out there just heard that. Like, that's a valuable lesson. Right. If you got your phone, you can create.
For context, yeah. And I'll ask both of you, Patricia, Troy and Rashad, how many pieces of content are you creating per month? Because everyone thinks everything's all fun, just traveling the world, and it's like you guys aren't working. But can you, for demonstrative purposes or context, how many pieces of content are you guys both creating for your brand per month? The real number. The soul crushing number.
How many days in a month?
I would say for us, so variety of different things. And of course we do Earn Your Leisure episodes every single week. So that's probably like 20 different clips that come from that. Market Mondays every single week, 20 different clips that come from that. But then just organic cell phone. Like, if I'm out, and you know, I had Troy actually video, he didn't want to do it, but
that's not true.
I had him videotape me the other day, like, cause like you said,
yeah.
Everybody's a videographer. All you need to do is hold the cell phone. Like, I be telling them, like, yo, just hold this phone and just take a video of me having a conversation with Bobby Schmurda.
Yep.
200,000 views. Yeah. That's all it's, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, it's yeah. Not complicated. We don't have to complicate this. So they do that almost all the time. Everywhere that we go, take pictures, stuff for story. So I would say probably upwards of
200-300.
Yeah, a couple hundred, probably a couple hundred.
But
definitely,
there's also a valuable lesson in that too. And that he left out the part that my I have a back issue. That's why I couldn't get out the car. But like most times, most people be like, "Yo, too prideful to take that."
Mike, right? Clip like, that face up.
Yeah, that's a fact. So like, there's no pride in me saying like, "Yo, let me take this video for you," because I already know if he sees a vision, let me record it, right? Because mm-hmm. I know that it's going to benefit the brand. It's not like, "Yo, I'm too good for that." Like, "Yo, bro, why do I got to take your video?" It's like, "Nah." I know, like, that's what he loves to do. Like, if he can't record it himself, let me be here. I'm here. What else am I going to be doing? Like, I'm going to watch him record it. So, like, helping add value in any way possible and putting, like, pride to the side. Like, all right, this is going to be something that's going to be potentially viral, or it's going to help build his brand. So, like, a lot of times, like, even some pictures, like, I'll take. It's not like, yo, give me photo credit. I'm like, nah, that's going to help build. If he wants to show his drip, like, of course, let me make sure that I take a dope-ass picture. Like, I've told that to plenty of people. Like, yo, I love photography. So, like, if I get to shoot, if he gets to be the product, let's do it.
The Drip Report has been legendary. You know about Drip Report, Patricia. You have become a fashion icon. How come you didn't come to Fashion Week? We did a Fashion Week show in New York.
What did you? Where? Oh, in New York. Yeah. Oh, I didn't. I wasn't. I couldn't be.
She's in the Maldives.
Next time I'm there. Yeah, I'm there.
To I was be in fair, Bora, like, Bora, Rashad. What are you talking about? I was in Bora, Bora. You kidding me?
I don't know where I was. I'm not going to lie. I was quiet this season, but next time I'll be there. But in terms of, like, again, everything is content. I would make content every day, and I think about content every day, and at least I produce probably at least, like, 30 pieces a month. That's my number. And I do this basically with myself and, like, my assistant.
There's no excuse. iPhone Pro Max, You, okay, there's small cameras. Like every time I see Troy, it's like pan here. Like you have to create. For those of you watching the show, you know I wasn't always comfortable being in front of the camera. But if you don't show your face, how are you gonna be able to make money and get clients? So my dad was like, "Okay, you want to work with hedge funds and not show your face? Good luck. You pick, overcome your fears, get out more content, and I think we can all say there's people that are maybe not even that good, but they just put out more content than everyone. And over the last 5-6 years, they've been able to elevate. So for everyone listening, put in chat the number of pieces of content you're going to make for your brand per month. I think you need to do at least 100 to get some kind of traction.
Consistent. And I think people don't put out as much content because they're self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
They think what other people are going to think of them. They put it out and it doesn't necessarily work right away and they just retreat. But you just got to treat it like baseball. Like, you know, just keep swinging. Eventually, you're going to hit a home run eventually. But you can't worry about what somebody else is thinking. You can't worry about how you look. You can't worry about, you know, you're going to get better the way you talk. Everything improves over the course of time. But yeah. I think that stops a lot of people from putting out content. They're so self-conscious. And that stopped me for a variety of years. Like, I've been wanting to do what we do now in 2014. But I'm like, who's going to care? Financial literacy, da, 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 da. And then finally, when I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Let's just do it. And it worked. So I feel like, you know, that's something that a lot of people struggle with. And you just have to just get out of your own way and do it. Because ultimately, it's better to live with failure than to live with regret. Because if it doesn't work out, it just doesn't work out. But if you never know what's going to happen, you're always going to like think about what if I did this? How would my life be different? How would my children's lives be different? And, you know, living with regret is a very painful situation. Patricia, before we wrap, let me ask you this. Royal Albert Hall. Can you talk about the significance of financial literacy? Did you ever think that, you know, financial literacy and the way that we display it? That's why I say a performance, because it is a performance. Like, you know, we did Invest Fest, we're doing Madison Square Garden, and our whole thing with financial literacy is to make it a vibe. So we add music, we add, you know, it's live performances, it's vibes, it's surprises. So it's really like, you know, a musical festival, but it's financial literacy. And it's not something that America, I think, has gotten used to it now, because we've done a few things in America and they kind of know. But internationally, I'm still not really sure if they understand the vibe, you know, because especially I know the UK is a more conservative country than America.
Very conservative.
Talk about the wave and the excitement and the importance of on African American history. I mean, on Black History Month for the UK, on Halloween, you know, financial literacy, Royal Albert Hall, all black cast of performers. Talk about the significance of that.
Well, firstly, the fact that you lot have the Royal Albert Hall, right, is like, it's actually mind blowing. Like the Queen goes there. Adele's been there. Like, that is like probably the most premium venue in the UK. So when you said that to me, I was like, Royal Albert Hall. Like, I was so shocked, because literally the royal, as in it's, I think it's the royals own this or something. I don't know. But like, it's a big thing. So the fact that you're able to kind of actually kind of create that momentum is really powerful. I think Brits, right, we can be a little bit stiff. We're a little bit like, who's that? Why are they like that? We can be a bit judgy. I'm not going to lie. We're a bit, there's a pride, and maybe it's that African pride coming in as well. So we can, you know, kind of have a certain stiffness about us. But I think that people, one, they want this information. They need this information. And I think they would be so excited to take it from you guys who are actually making a move in the US, bringing that energy over, which is going to have a lot of flair, I assume. It's going to be, lots going to be going on. They're going to be a bit stush. You know, do you know what it is to be stush?
No, yeah, tell me.
In the beginning, stush. Right? Gotcha. They're going to have a bit, but they're taking it in. And I think that them seeing these examples is going to be super powerful, where people can learn more about how to get together to like bring the community together to make money and to build that literacy and build things together, which I'll be honest, in the black community in the UK is not something that we do as much. Like, we don't really create these black things together. Everyone is usually working in isolation. They've got their job. they've, you know, they've become the lawyer or they've become the doctor, right? They've done that. But what if they unionized? What if they learned how to work together? What if they worked with their African-American counterparts to actually build something that actually has momentum? Yeah. I think that there's power in numbers. So the fact that you guys are coming is like, it's sick. It's great.
Yeah, don't be legendary. Yeah.
And everyone, you will be there as well.
I'll be there as well. Find the flag.
Yes, go to the link under the description of this bio. Get your ticket. Go to onionleisure.com. Hit the InvestFest Euro tab. Go to investfest.com, investfesteuro.com. Get your tickets. It's going to be not even just a night to remember, a weekend to remember. We got a Halloween party. Shout out to Terrence J. We got a VIP experience on Sunday. So it's going to be so much vibes. And as you said, bring your umbrellas. Because it's a hundred, it's usually rainy in London, but it's 100% chance that a tsunami of drip.
No question.
Displayed. It's 100%.
Not even a question.
It's 100% chance that a tsunami of
drip. That was well played.
Will be on full display for the whole entire week.
Like they've never seen before. Yeah. Like you've never. Wow. It's a fitting way to end Black History Month.
Yes.
In the UK.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's only
I really thought you were talking about actual rain because people should actually
I did too. Umbrellas.
Oh, yeah.
It does actually rain a lot here.
It's going
to
rain.
Yeah, now you have to bring your London fogs out. Bring the umbrellas out.
Bring the rain boots. But
that's when I brainstorm.
But the drip will come out regardless because London's a fashion town too.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, their casual stuff is like amazing. I was walking around like, this is your gym gear? Like, I thought they were going out. Listen, for everyone in America, bring your best. Like, I was going through, I was in the airport yesterday in the lounge, went through a whole bunch of lookbooks, picked out 14, 15 outfits. Serious. It is no joke.
We're not playing no games. We coming to represent.
And shout out to our London crew. Shout out to Dayu. Shout out to Tape London. We've developed a real strong relationships with a lot of people in London. And I'm excited for the Americans because there's a lot of Americans that's coming out there too. I'm excited to Americans. A lot of them, this is their first time coming to the UK, coming to London. Mm-hmm. So it's dope that they're coming like for us. And it's become a tourist.
London is such a beautiful city. Like,
yeah.
Movies don't do it justice. I was in awe of like the architecture. Like you can see where Beverly Hills got the inspiration to like design the city like that. You guys are going to have a great time, but I'm telling you, bring your best. Yeah.
It has a nice mixture of like, it looks historic, but it has its modern pieces. And so, that was my first time going.
And the February. Service was amazing. Like I had a
Starbucks
cup and I was about to throw it away. The girl at the hotel was like, let me take this rubbish from you. I'm like, what is that?
We're very polite. That's our thing.
Don't forget about
Lobby Boys.
Don't forget about Lobby the nightlife. We set a record.
Lobby Boys.
We went out 7 nights in a row.
Y'all went out 7. I went out 4 this one. One date to help Troy in the morning.
The nightlife in London. Tired. Oh, if you go to London, I highly suggest that you take the train to Paris also.
Got
to
do it.
2-hour train ride to Paris. Paris is another world-class city. Dope city.
And that's even a dope experience, just getting on the train and going to a different country. Fly. Sleep on the train. Don't worry about that. Go out at night, sleep on the train, and then you can party all day.
Patricia, before we leave, can you say earn your leisure?
Earn your leisure is what I would say.
Yeah.
That's going to be like the Maybach music drop. Like, I love British accent. I love the
British accent. British accent.
Earn your leisure. Earn your leisure.
And now.
Yeah, there you have it.
And now.
I can't say leisure, but leisure just doesn't feel like how it should be said.
Well, you know, we speak broken English in America because you know, with the whole history of America being it's actually a British colony originally. But I learned a few different things. Like even in Canada, where they speak what they call the Queen's English. So they say I'm trying to think of a word. Produce, they say a produce, like everything.
Oh yeah.
Like that's like produce instead of like produce. Mm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so everything that they say is like a little tweak on it. So leisure instead of leisure. But we take the easy way in America. Because a lot of stuff that we say doesn't really make any sense phonetically.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's a bunch of words like that. Yeah.
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 But that's the American way.
Shout out to all the earners.
Yes.
Shout out to Scarlett too. Shout out to Scarlett, our UK earner.
Yes.
Shout out to Scarlett. She's been helping out.
So once again, Patricia, thank you. Appreciate you.
No worries.
To everybody in the UK, get your tickets. InvestFest London coming Halloween weekend.
I'm excited.
a weekend to remember for sure. And we will tap in.